Hello, I'm Taboo.
And I'm Church. I was drinking when you said that.
Fuck it, I'm going with it. And we are the Dark Souls 2.
You fucked that up as well. Oh, wait, no, you didn't.
You fucked it up.
Well, I was drinking. I had a mouthful. And then you're like, I'm Taboo. And I'm thinking, shit, I don't give a fuck. I'm supposed to... You don't need to tell me that. You need to tell them that.
I did! And then you went and drank.
Anyway.
Which is how you can tell that the whole rest of the podcast is going to be bad. Because you're giving your excuses right from the beginning.
It's going to be a good one.
I'm Taboo.
And I'm Church.
And we are the Dark Souls 2.
And welcome to the Dark Souls 2, where this episode we're talking about...
You did it again!
Well, I think there's an expectation now. By the way, did you like sit on one of your nuts or something? That was really high pitched.
How do you do it?
Mm. Oh, so what are you talking about that I did?
The pause.
Oh, yeah, well, I didn't know what we're doing.
Well, fucking... It's the same opening every week.
So, we're talking about Brightstone Cove, Tsel'Dora. Everything after the Prowling Magus fight.
What?
Magus.
Okay.
All the way up to the Duke's Dear Freya.
Glad we cleared that up.
So am I.
So, anything happening in the community this week?
No, nothing. It's all fine. No, well, Bloodborne trailer came out. No, the newest trailer, Bloodborne?
Yeah, a bit of gameplay in this one, which is super awesome. And I remember showing it to you earlier on in the week, and the very next thing that you said to me is, oh my god, we have to be an authority on this, because it was just so awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, so what we got to see is not a lot more than what we kind of already know, but it's given us a bit more look at the environments, and I gotta say, how pretty does it look?
The attention to detail, not just on the environments, but also on the enemies, just spectacular. Yeah. And also, I love the way you like... Has these like fold down modular weapons, and then it's like, oh, shit's getting serious. I'm going to flip out my freaking scythe.
Yep. Oh, I wonder how that works because he has so many of these fold away weapons. I'm wondering if there's multiple weapons that are just that way designed, or if it's more that he has a particular weapon that is modular in some way, and you sort of do upgrades and modify it. And it's like, I've modified it down the
scythe path
or the axe path or whatever. I wonder about that.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's a good point.
And it also showed off a bit of the shotgun play as well, which is definitely confirmed that, yes, he is using a shotgun in the game. The dodging, as we said, less about rolling and shielding and more about just being agile and on your feet and checking out where the next attack is coming from and dodging away from it.
There was some rolling.
Sure, but less about that kind of a play and more about just being agile, I think. But yeah, it's the environments that really stood out. We've actually put up a post on our website, thedarksouls2.com, with the trailer and some high-quality screenshots from the game. And yeah, I mean, as I said on that post, Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2 almost look barren by comparison.
Yeah.
And Dark Souls 2 is a pretty game. It's just, yeah, they've just crammed so much detail in there.
It looks awesome.
So, hey guys, we actually have an announcement, so we're just going to cut this in here. Excuse our poor mic quality. Some things have happened since we recorded the actual episode, so we're just going to do this in a little Skype call.
Yeah, hi. So we're actually not in the same room for once.
Yeah, we've had a winner for our competition. It finished a couple of days ago, and that happened to be after we finished recording the main podcast, so we're just going to cut this in after the fact.
Yeah, absolutely. So after perusing the various submissions at length and having some lengthy discussions about them, the winner that we picked was Jim O'Brien's submission. He's also known as Zanmushi, Zanmushi, on Instagram.
Yeah, but more importantly, he seems to have a business doing advertising, and I went on his website, and he's got some really cool designs. So if anybody's interested in checking that sort of stuff out, JimDoesAdvertising.com, how appropriately named.
Yeah, I mean, Jim O'Brien does advertising, and Jim O'Brien does advertising. Okay.
Now, that's going to be our avatar moving forward, I guess, but we sort of had a unexpected winner as well.
Absolutely. So we got a submission from one of the guys that we've spoken to pretty regularly, actually, James Gowan. And it was one of the early designs we got, and it was our favorite when we got it. And one of the things that you said was, how good would that look on a t-shirt? And I really agree, and that still holds true today. So we're actually going to kind of include him as a kind of runner-up.
I'm going to call him an equal winner.
Okay. You do love all our fans equally.
Only the good ones. But yeah, so he actually did a mock-up of his design on a shirt, which is how I fell in love with it. So what we had a bit of a chat with James, and what we decided is we're going to keep his design on hand in case we ever sort of branch into merchandise or anything like that moving forward. We've got no concrete plans at the moment, but I suppose now's a good time to sort of put it out to you guys. Let us know if anybody would be interested in, I don't know, buying a The Dark Souls 2 t-shirt.
Yeah, maybe we put that mock-up of a shirt up so people can see what it looks like, because I quite like it. I want so cool. At least you and I to get one each.
Yeah, absolutely. But
if people will buy them, and Betty wants one as well, she's indicated, you know, pointing to herself, like, what about me? So if people will buy them as well, then definitely we'll put them on the website. We don't expect to make any vast amount of money off them or anything, but, you know, it'd be nice if people want to, you know,
rep the
Dark Souls 2.
I think to our name we've made a grand total of like $7, so hey, anything something.
Yeah, anything is something. That's very philosophical.
But James, his design was quite polished, I assume, because he's actually a graphics designer and he's got a cool website as well. I like a lot of his stuff. James Gowan, GOWAN.com. So we'll put both those websites up on the show notes in case anybody is interested in checking them out. But yeah, thanks so much to everyone that did send in a submission. We really did like them all, but unfortunately, we could only choose one, and we sort of broke that rule even. So, yeah.
Yeah. And actually, I was really surprised at the quality of basically everything that came in. There was some stuff that was definitely meant to be a joke, and I think I mentioned a couple of times, I used one of the humorous ones as my wallpaper at work because I love it so much. But there was even some submissions that came in drawn on paper that were really good quality. So, I'm quite surprised that everything was so spectacular.
Okay, so yeah, that's pretty much it. The competition's now concluded and we're really happy with what's come of it. So thanks again, guys. I think the only other thing that we'll quickly just throw in now, seeing as we're recording this, is depending on where I cut it in before or after, we are going to have a quick chat about a little Bloodborne teaser in a moment. And that was, again, recorded a few days ago. And since then, a full 7-minute actual gameplay trailer has come out. So just letting you guys know, if you've seen the teaser, there's now a trailer, and we'll include the link to that in the show notes as well.
Yeah, 7 minutes of straight gameplay. It's killer.
Pretty
exciting. I mean, it's the most excited I've been about Bloodborne. It looks spectacular. So that's cool. You want to check it out, and we will link to it.
Okay, so back to the podcast.
Yep. You need some kind of weird noise, like... doo-doo-doo. Okay, bye.
So a thing happened.
An awesome thing.
Yeah. The guys from the Twin Humanities podcast gave us a shout out on their podcast.
Yeah, which is amazing. I mean, they run a really solid...
Dark Souls inspired podcast.
Yeah, which is really cool. And if you listen to us, obviously you like Dark Souls podcasts. What you need to do is go to their podcast and listen to them because they are awesome.
Yeah, check them out. Twinhumanities.com, or tell them that we said hi over on the all Twitter tubes at twitter.com/twinhumanities. CJ and Patty, super cool guys. They've stuck with it, it seems. They're into their third season, and they've been around since at least Dark Souls 1 era. And, they certainly seem to know what they're doing. They're more of a mixed bag, from what I understand. They seem to sort of keep you in touch with what's going on in the community and whatnot. Super funny guys. I like it.
Quite decent to listen to. Okay. So, yeah, thanks, guys.
Yeah, really appreciate it.
Oh, we're all friends, aren't we? This is cool.
Sure.
So anyway, you want to talk about that thing? Brightstone Cove Tal'Dorei?
Yeah, let's talk about that thing.
Yeah, let's do it. All right. So, we're going to dive right in. Last episode, we killed the prowling magus and the congregation. Just fucking wrecked the show. Rock up in the church and just kill everyone, right?
Yep, so the prowling magazine is dead.
That was the weakest of all of them.
Oh, it's a word that begins with M-A-G. What do you want from me?
All right. So... immediately after the cathedral, turn left, and you'll find a small alcove with a ladder. Climb up, and you'll meet Cromwell the Pardoner, and this is a kind of character that you'll recognize from Dark Souls 1.
I am Cromwell. Regret, anguish, disillusion, bewilderment. What wonderful gifts they are. To together, they are the essence of life. Don't you agree?
Yeah, he definitely seems to be a bit of a nod to Oswald with Karim, who was the really ominous-looking guy at the bottom of the ladder when you first went up and rung the first bell after defeating the gargoyles. I still have a memory of the first time I got down that ladder and just seeing this guy standing there with his arms open, not moving, yeah. And I was just like, he's blocking my exit. He's going to attack me. What the fuck do I do here?
It always made me want to, like, you know, if I know someone's going to approach me and talk to me, you know, just stand with my arms like that, see how they respond. Because he must get tired. But that's the thing is, I was thinking about it. I remember ages ago when I played the game. When he hears you approaching, does he then put his arms out? Oh, shit, someone's coming. I'll stand up and I'll just stand like this. Oh, hello. Or does he just stand there all fucking day like that? Like, he takes his shirt off and his arms are just, like, super defined from having his arms out like that all day, you know?
We actually used to have a punishment. I used to do Air Force cadets, and if one of the cadets was misbehaving, we would put leaves in either one of their hands and have them sort of hold their hands palm up directly out in front of them, kind of like a zombie, but palm up, and make them march laps around the parade square. And after, you know, half a lap, their arms would get tired and they'd want to drop their hands. And when they did, you'd, you know, start paying out on them. What, a leaf's too heavy for you? I can't believe you can't hold your hands up. Is that leaf really starting to hurt? Oh, and, you know, make them feel embarrassed.
Wow.
Yeah.
I just would have been like, okay, so instead of me doing that, how about you go and fuck yourself?
And that's why you wouldn't have made it far in the cadets.
Yeah, but I wouldn't have been marching around holding leaves. Anyway. So, Cromwell the Pardoner is actually dressed exactly the same as Oswald of Karim. They're wearing the same shit.
Yep.
And if your faith is over 35, as soon as you talk to Cromwell, he's going to give you the Ring of Resistance, which increases resistance to poison, bleeding, petrification, and curse. Now, the ring's item description says that it's from a lapis and was created by a sorcerer so powerful he became feared. And we've already met that sorcerer, I think.
Well, I think so, yeah. I made the connection that I reckon it must be Strayed, because that fits his narrative. Alaphus started to fear Strayed, and as such, he ended up petrified.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Was it Alaphus? Because Strayed was just from Alaphus. He could have gone to...
I think it was
he ended up Alaphus. He ended up petrified in the Lost Bastille. And that's one of those weird mysteries, isn't it? Because it's implied strongly that Vendrick built the Lost Bastille to contain the undead, and then you find Strayed there, and the first thing Strayed says is, oh, Dranglake, never heard of it. Mm. But that's Vendrick City. So Vendrick built the place you're in. So either you're batshit insane, or... there's some, like, they transported your statue there or some shit.
And I'm pretty sure we had one of our fans explain that when we brought it up last time, and I've completely forgotten the explanation, so moving right along.
Oh, I don't remember any such explanation. So moving right along.
He also has the purpose of pardoning you if you do kill someone, or not kill someone, attack someone. So yes. His other purpose is if you accidentally attack an NPC, as... what used to happen to me all the time while I was playing Demon Souls on the PlayStation, the R2 button was really sensitive and just happened to be completely exposed. So anytime I'd be in, like, a safe area standing in front of an NPC, knowing that I'm not going to get attacked, and I'm like, gotta go grab a drink, I'd put the controller down and it would bump the freaking R2 button and it would take a swing at the freaking NPC that I'm looking at, to the point where I actually had to stop playing a game one time because I did it to like 3 NPCs and I'm like, well, this is just bullshit. I can't continue with this character. I've lost interest altogether.
Tell that to the fucking judge. Oh, I'm sorry I just randomly attacked the two people. I bumped R2, you see. I needed to get a drink.
It happens. So, yeah. So, in that case, you can run with your tail between your legs before the NPC kills you and go talk to Cromwell and he will pardon your sins and the NPC will no longer be hostile. Don't know how that really works. What, does he just have a...
He goes and has a chat with them and says, oh, that guy's not so bad. He's all right. Come on.
That's pretty much how it must go, I'm guessing.
Yeah, but he doesn't lower your sin level.
No, but we should quickly brush over sin. Let's again. We have discussed it before, yeah. So okay. It'll be a quick chat.
So you can gain sin in a couple of ways. You gain sin by invading enemies with a cracked red eye orb and killing them. You also gain sin by killing NPCs. Well, actually, more specifically, if an NPC dies and you get their souls, then you gain a level of sin. So hypothetically, an NPC could walk off a cliff or whatever. If you collect the souls, you get the sin, which sucks. Sin level 10 to 99 labels you a sinner. Sin level 100 plus labels you a wretch. Anyone who is a sinner or higher can be invaded by Blue Sentinels. If you get invaded by Blue Sentinels and killed, you lose a sin level. So your sin level stays the same, no matter whether you speak to Cromwell or not, but it does save you from hostile NPCs aggroing.
Now, what else can you do at Cromwell?
Oh, you can buy shit.
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
Cromwell, I have a donut in my mouth, by the way, so just carry on.
Did you say donut? Dude, you can't have that recorded on the podcast where you're eating a fucking donut.
Well,
whatever. looks like I'm in charge while you eat that. So Cromwell sells a bunch of resistance rings, which are fucking useless.
Yes, just while I...
Shut up. Shut up. Or you'll be eating something else in a minute. Cromwell also sells... I meant a knuckle sandwich, okay? Not my penis. Cromwell also sells the White Priest set. Will you stop chortling? Stop it! It's fucking aggravating. I'm going to make you march around holding all kinds of fucking foliage if you're not careful. Stop it. Yeah, I'm sure it'll hurt worse in a second if you don't fucking shut up. You're all about, oh, we got to do this quickly, you know, we got to get it done, it's getting late, blah, blah, blah. And then you just fucking cackle away like a witch with Down syndrome. Donut. Stop it. Just eat it. Stuff it in your mouth. I don't have to fucking listen to you anymore.
I can't. You're making me laugh too much.
Like I'm tickling you. Wow. Okay. He also sells the White Priest set, the traditional garb of Drang Lake clerics, which is a really goofy headpiece which increases your faith by one. Do you know that?
Mm.
You did know that.
Oh, well, you burped.
No, I did burp. It's very observant of you. He also sells some miracles, none of which I think are quite worth going into. He's also surrounded by corpses, creepy bastard.
Yeah, I think that might be a...
eat.
No, I'm going to talk now. I think that might be a bit of a nod to Petrus of Thoroland from Dark Souls 1. Because he was also a cleric. And,
keep going. Oh, you fucking killed it. Because it's like, Petrus? Do you get it?
No, it's Petrus, you dickhead.
You could have just kept talking and I could have done the tune in the background. It would
have
been hilarious.
Nobody would have got it.
But then you could have asked me why I did that and I could have said, because Petrus sounds like Tetris.
Still nobody would have got.
This is how you set up a joke. What do you mean people wouldn't
badly.
What do you mean people wouldn't have fucking got it? People can't understand that Petrus sounds like Tetris?
Yeah, they just can't understand the humor in what you just did.
It doesn't have to be humorous, it just has to be...
funny?
Oh, shut up. Eat the fucking donut.
I will.
Anyway, so, I'm sorry, how is it a nod to Petrus of Thoroland?
Oh, I've got a donut in my mouth.
You fucking asshole. Good God. He also sells the cleric small shield, which is notable because it can parry spells like a lightsaber.
Mm.
One of those corpses carries the cleric small shield, which is notable because it can parry spells like a lightsaber.
Mm.
So there's also a bonfire aesthetic and some souls and a skeptic spice. But anyway, we're going to go back down the ladder, right? Now, a cliff on the left kind of overlooks the area you're heading into, and there's a crystal lizard there. It's worth sniping him now, I think, as long as you don't die between now and picking him up, because if you die, you lose all his guts.
But why would you? Because there's a bonfire just to the right. So, hit the bonfire, and then I'd go look at the lizard myself.
I suppose that makes sense.
Hmm.
Man, that donut really helped your mental acuity.
Hmm. It's nearly over. Okay, back in the game. Right, so... from that bonfire, the chapel threshold bonfire, go down the stairs, and underneath the stairs is a corpse. And on said corpse is only a soul of a proud knight. The only reason we're pointing it out is because it's an easy thing to miss. And then opposite the corpse is a doorway.
Yeah, in that room there's an urn, so you can smash that to get some herbs.
Yep. And then head out onto a bridge. And if you have any sort of a ranged ability, try and take out the hollow mages that are sort of hanging around, peppered around the place.
Yeah, those guys frustrate the living fuck out of me.
Because, as I was about to say, they will be a major pain in your ass if you don't deal with them now. So, tell me about the hollow mages.
The hollow mages are Drang Lake mages that are male. They wear different garb if they're female. So these guys are all male. Why are they separated out by, like, all the males go over to Brightstone Cove, Sildora, and all the females go off to some other place?
Maybe it's like, you know, birds. That doesn't make any sense. Never mind, carry on.
Maybe it's like birds. The look in your face of self-assuredness. To like, maybe it's like, you know, birds. Yeah, maybe it is like birds. All the male birds in one place.
Or they just
like, birds in another place.
They flock and migrate and mingle, have sex, and then separate again.
All right. So it strikes me that these guys are here because there was a Drang-like army detachment in Brightstone Cove, Seldora. But why the mages, again, got separated out from the rest of the soldiers? All the mages ended up downstairs in this infected area, and all the soldiers stayed back upstairs or something. Maybe they're like birds as well. Who knows? They can drop the White Hollow set, which has another goofy hood, which raises your intelligence by one.
Yeah.
These guys also drop the bat staff. It's literally a staff with a dead bat on the end of it.
Yeah, it's pretty freaking weird, but the item description kind of explains it. It does poison damage if you strike people with it, and the item description says, "The bat affixed to its tip is simply a charm. It has no bearing on the staff's power. However, the germs on the cadaver poison foes upon contact in strikes given."
Just paraphrase that.
Yeah, it's fine.
That's all right. Nobody knows. They're not going to check, are they? Yeah, nah. They're not going to have a look. Unless and go,
they, you know, pull that up bloody the wiki while listening.
Bloody taboo. He never gets it right. No, they're not going to do that. That's just something I keep to myself. Anyway.
It was close enough.
So after you shoot those bastards, you can ride the zipline. This is the first zipline in the game, isn't it?
Yeah, and if you don't deal with the mages, like we told you to earlier, they cast so fast and yep. Their spells track. So if you're on the zipline, so many times I got knocked off.
Yes. And directly under you, spells. Directly under you is a big Sarlacc pit.
Yeah, incredible.
We'll go into it later. So, what?
We'll go into it later.
Hilarious. So, what is interesting, and you can call me stupid for this, I expect you will. The first time I played the game, I noticed there were those wooden structures there, but I didn't notice there was a zip line, and so I jumped.
You jumped?
I jumped.
And you didn't make it,
did
you?
No, I did. No, the first jump I made, I made every time. Just jump it. I just thought that's what you had to do.
Oh, my.
The second zip line, I don't think you can jump. I think I had to go from the same side and jump horizontally instead of going across or something. But, yeah, it wasn't until my second playthrough on the PC after getting rid of the Xbox version.
That Betty pointed out that you could do that.
Yeah, I don't know. No, I knew that. I knew that from... No, I did.
She's disagreeing right now, so we'll see how that plays out.
She can't be right all the time.
I think her face says otherwise.
What? Someone wrote it in her face. I'm right all the time.
No, otherwise.
We now need to take we need to write otherwise on your face and take a picture of it and put it on the internet.
Anyway.
On the other side of the zip line, where are we at? On the other side, there are several options. It's best to clear the area by ranging another of those hollow mages and a spider and heading across the second zip line early. And the reason why is because we're heading to a bonfire. It's worth activating it early, I think.
Yeah, and I think we should point out, like, this area can be a bit convoluted. Mm-hmm. And I read through your notes because, as we pointed out a few weeks ago, Church has been writing the notes for a little bit. And I was quite happy with the way you went about it, but it is going to be a bit loopy-backy. So
loopy-backy.
Yeah, it's the name of my tobacco.
It's marijuana.
Yeah.
It's loopy-backy.
But yeah, look, so just stick with us, and we're going to head to the second bonfire for the area now just to open it up.
Yeah. So, on the wall in front of you, there's a door. Head inside and around a corner, and you will be in a room with two hollow mages and a giant hole in the ground.
Mm.
What you want to do is kill the mages, and it can actually be quite tough if you try to range them. It's actually better to, in my opinion, rush up and stab them to death.
And this hole is directly above the bonfire.
It is. With the Silver Cat Ring, you can actually jump down, but there's also a ladder. I actually, again, you can make fun of me about this later, but I thought you had to jump down.
No, you didn't know you could just go to the ladder around the corner?
The ladder's hidden around a corner. So anyway, go down the ladder and you'll be in a room with two spiders and the Lower Brightstone Cove bonfire.
Mm-hmm.
While you're down here, make sure you open the door. It only opens from the inside.
Yep, and from that bonfire, we're going to warp back to the Chapel Threshold bonfire, which is the first one in the area.
Mm-hmm. And go back to the first zipline, but don't go across yet. On your left is a platform from which you can collect the crystal lizard's innards and continue along onto a little rocky ledge with a corpse holding some titanite. So from here, again, you can drop off the ledge, and this is where you'll be happy you opened that door. You'll kill a basilisk, and these ones are a bit different to the basilisks we've seen earlier.
Yeah, they're sand basilisks, and what makes them different is purely their ability to burrow into the sand. And they also seem to have two squinty anus hole sockets where their big bulbous eyes used to be. And as we point out, those eyes aren't actually their real eyes, but for some reason, these ones don't have them. So I've actually just come up with a theory. Maybe what it is that we know that the big bulbous eyes are used to deter enemies. It's to make them look more scary. What I'm proposing is maybe the basilisks lost their eyes somehow, and so they didn't have that defense mechanism, so they learned how to burrow instead to keep themselves safe.
Oh, that's a bit of a... Yeah. Now, immediately to your right is a door, so head inside, and you'll meet Weaponsmith Ornifex, who you met earlier.
Yeah, so she's the one that we freed in the Shaded Woods, and we've covered her before and what she basically does. She allows you to trade boss souls for different types of weapons, and as thanks, she allows you to do your first trade for free.
Yeah.
And I also found that you're more likely to get weapons with special R2 attacks from her souls.
Yes. I don't think Strayed sells any that do special R2 attacks, but she sells a bunch where, you know, you do R2 and, for instance, it, you know, it shoots some lightning out or...
Yeah.
Okay. Now, in her room, there are some bookshelves you can break, and there's a corpse behind there with a flame butterfly and a Pharos lockstone. It's always good to get some Pharos lockstones.
Yeah.
You can also snipe some enemies through a window in Ornifex's room. I always kill the Holy Mages if I can because they drop Skeptic Spices.
Yeah. Now, you're talking about sniping the Holy Mage in the room next door, though, that's aren't right. you? So not you look the actual the mages out in the courtyard.
That's exactly it.
From here, we're going to leave Ornifex's room and turn right and head back to that door that you mentioned that we should open from the inside because we're heading back to the bonfire and warping to the first one again.
That's right.
So this time we're heading back down the stairs and we're going to ride the first zip line and explore the building on the other side of the chasm.
Yep, so you're going to turn left at the end of the zip line and the door is at the left there by some vases. When you head inside, you're going to see at the back of the room Creighton of Mirror and Mild-Mannered Pate, our old friends, kicking the shit out of each other.
Yeah, but they'll only be there if you've exhausted their dialogue in each other area that they appear. So yes. If you've been following our playthrough so far and doing the things that we've said, then they should be there. And it's interesting. It seems that this is the sort of crescendo to their quest line.
Yeah, this is it. This is the culmination. They finally found each other and they're going to exact their revenge.
Yep.
And they're all whinging. Oh, he swung at me. Oh, come and give me a hand.
Yep, yep.
Oh, so shut up and fight. You got shit to do.
They're locked in battle. And the way to go about this is you can either ignore them and eventually one will win.
And I think it's normally Pate that wins.
Yep. But if you choose to kill one of them, then the other one is actually thankful to you and you get a little bit of a reward for it.
Yeah.
So whichever one you choose to kill, you'll get the Tseldora den key from the one you left living.
Exactly.
You'll also get a reward from the person that you left living as well. In the case of killing Creighton, you'll get Pate's helm, and he'll also give you the key. If you kill Pate, you'll get the Ring of Thorns, which you'll probably already have from exhausting dialogue with Pate earlier, and Creighton will give you his armor set and the key as well.
Yes.
If you don't kill either and let them conclude the battle themselves, you won't get the key. So while I am inclined to think they're both dirtbags, and you have a bit to say about that anyway, it is kind of worth picking one to side with at this point because that key does unlock a room a little later on that gets you a pretty cool pickup.
Yeah. So there's also a weird room in this larger room behind a door, which is just a little square room. On the right, there's a cave in the wall with some bookshelves covering it. I like to call it IKEA furniture because you nudge it and it all breaks. and there's a spider in there, but that seems to be the only thing that happens in that room.
Yeah, and by cave, you just mean a little burrow like what we saw when we were approaching the... cave just implies that there might be something that you could go into and explore, which you can't.
But it's concave. Anyway. At the back of the room where they were fighting, there's some urns to break and get some charcoal pine resin. We haven't seen that before, I don't think. It adds fire damage to your right-hand weapon. Pretty standard. There's also some more IKEA furniture against the back left wall, and that conceals a cave entrance. If you head along that path that is unveiled, you'll find a corpse holding a torch. And outside the door at the end is a parasitized undead.
Yeah, now we actually mentioned the parasite spiders last episode, so we won't cover them in too much detail this time, but their name implies that they are parasites. So these enemies that you see, which are sort of more humanoid and standing on their legs with the spiders on their back, are the product of what happens when a spider seems to latch onto a human vessel.
That's right. The parasitized undead are the denizens of Brightstone Cove Tseldora before the spiders came and started wrecking everything. Now, you want to turn right after killing him and you'll see a crystal lizard. You want to kill him relatively quickly because when he runs away, he jumps onto a lower platform and hides behind another parasitized undead. And so you can't range him. While he fades away, you're actually shooting the other guy.
Mm.
By the time he's dead, the crystal lizard disappears. So it's best to kill him quickly.
Yeah, I had a ton of trouble with this one.
Frustrates the shit out of me.
Mm.
Now, there is also on that same platform, before you jump down to chase that crystal lizard, a titanite chunk on a corpse. So jump down onto the ledge below, and once the parasitized undead there is dead, you can turn to your left, cross a wooden bridge, and enter a room with three more parasitized undead waiting.
Yeah, and in this room, you'll find some more of that furniture that you're talking about, which if you break, you'll find a switch.
Yes.
And this wall switch activates this strange little platform that sort of comes out of the wall. And if you go back up the little staircase in the room, you can make this awkward kind of a jump from the top of the stairs across this platform.
Yeah, it's a really weird jump because it's like a pillar in your way. But on the platform is a chest containing the Southern Ritual Band plus one, which adds two attunement slots.
Super awesome ring for me because, as we all know, I don't play too much of a mage character, so I don't like wasting my levels on attunement slots. So this ring allows me to be much more formidable with things like, you know, pyro characters and that kind of stuff where I want to equip a couple of spells.
Yeah, which is cool. I like that. I noticed that the description of the ring, it reminds me of a kind of motif in the area. It says, this modest-looking ring contains very powerful magic. To imagine what unspeakable deeds were performed to create such rings, one need only recall the cruel fate of the residents of Aldia. So again, it refers to Aldia as a place, not a person.
Mm.
But it's a reference to sin. It's talking about misdeeds. They also talk at length about how Najka and Tark and the ultimate boss of this area are all created from the misdeeds of an ancient being. And Cromwell, the pardoner of sins, is here. And it's kind of like, this is... They talk a lot about sins in this area. An amalgamation
of sin, yeah.
Yeah, sins and misdeeds and doing bad shit.
Yeah, and as we said, you also meet Crate and Pate, who are also quite debatably known for their sins.
Mm, absolutely. In that room also, I noticed there's this stupid hollow mage outside who snipes at you through an open window. And if you were not a rangy type person, you'd have a lot of trouble dealing with that. It frustrates me. Now, there's a door from this room, and you walked out it and... straight into the pit. Like, you walked out, you went straight into the pit, and you turned to me, right? And you were so angry, and you went, well, that's a fucking stupid door if ever I saw one. So indignant.
That fucking is. Why did they put it there? It just leads to a fucking Sarlacc pit.
No, you've got to... There's more out there. You just walked off the edge. You just opened the door and just saunter along, you know, blind to the world.
It's like the door in...
But there's more to that too. Lost Bastille, I know what you're going to say. The door's nowhere.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. It's still this door that just leads to a drop-off.
Like, I can understand that in the contents of a video game, that door makes sense. But in the context of someone building the Lost Bastille, why'd they put a door there?
Anyway, we've had this conversation. Let's move along.
Yeah, so actually the way we'd get out of here, according to our playthrough, is to Homeward Bone, back to the Chapel Threshold Bonfire. You're going to head back out onto the ledge and down the first zip line. Now, across the chasm, facing away from the building where Crate and Pate fought, you'll see an item glowing in an open doorway. You can jump across, and it's just some titanite, but you can skip it, obviously, because it's not that great. And if you don't have a homeward bone and don't want to use your dark sign, that's the only way out of there other than jumping into the pit, which raises the question, what's that structure for? But why? I mean, it would take a lot of effort to build a thing like that. It's a really nice, well-constructed kind of portico-looking thing.
Hmm.
It's covered, and it's like a little platform.
Yeah.
There's no room inside, though, because it's like a rock wall, and there's no, like, ladder or staircase or anything out of there.
Maybe, because it's directly above the Sarlacc pit, so maybe it was just housing for people or a place to sleep or throw a swag or whatever, and when the Sarlacc pit appeared, some things fell into the pit below, and
that might make sense. Okay. Yeah, okay. I pay it.
So I told you, it's all about the confidence you give when you make up bullshit that makes people believe you.
No, but it's believable in and of itself. It stands on its own merits.
Thank you.
So, assuming you didn't jump the gap and go into that room, let's go get another item. So instead of taking the second zip line, we're going to continue straight. You'll go down onto a wooden platform and then down onto a stone platform with a corpse. There's some titanite on there. But then you want to jump onto the platform below. You've got to be careful to jump onto the stone ledge, not onto the sand floor. Head inside the structure you were standing on and you'll find an Estus Flask shard, which is decent.
Yeah, now just so we're clear, the platform you're talking about dropping onto above is where a mage stands right next to some powder kegs. So if you see those powder kegs, you'll know where we're talking about. And I love getting the Estus Flask shard here. I kind of feel like the Estus Flask shards are one of the few items in the game that so far have always been put in logical places. They're kind of like the Easter egg hunt of the game. Each one is somewhat hidden, you know, down a well where you've got to knock off a brick to get to, or, you know, behind an illusory wall. So I like that, you know, you've got to track them down in these awesome ways.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, my first playthrough on the Xbox, I didn't make that jump. And then I was down the bottom and I could see the glowing thing in the window. And I thought, how do I get that?
Yeah.
I'm so dumb that I didn't go and do it.
Oh, well, see, I'm the opposite. I thought that and I figured it out. But I don't think I did it this way. I think I actually made a massive jump from somewhere and it was like pixel perfect and like an inch further and I wouldn't be able to make it. So I just got lucky, I think. I don't think it was supposed to be done that way. Now, from this little structure where you get the Estus Flash Shard, drop down onto the sand below and you'll find a corpse on your left that holds a petrified dragon bone, but you'll have to fight a few spiders to get it.
Yeah, they come boiling over the hill like a nightmare. I don't like spiders, I got to say. I let them live because they're noble creatures, but not in the game. I kill them in the IRL. Game, but in real life, IRL. Lol. can't believe you say IRL.
You just said in real life, and I had said it in half the time.
No, not in half the time, because then we have to have this conversation about how lame it is.
Yeah, who brought that upon us?
You said IRL, but anyway, no, you shouldn't kill spiders. They're noble creatures. They kill all the bugs I hate, but I just don't like spiders. They're a bit creepy. I'm Australian. It's a problem. All right. So head around the pit, the giant Sarlacc pit. Let's talk about the pit. What's going on with that pit?
It's a giant Sarlacc pit.
Yeah. So it's similar. It reminds me of the Sarlacc pit. No teeth, though, of course. Just this constant. It's like a eternal. It's like a perpetual motion machine. There's always sand falling down, but no sand ever disappears from the top. And if you fall in there, you will die.
Yes. Every time. No way to get out.
What does it mean?
I don't know, but it reminds me of those... I always forget what they're called, but we had this...
quicksand?
Bug in Australia, which used to burrow in that way, like exactly like that, like a Sarlacc. It would burrow under the ground and like flick sand out in a concave sort of a way so that there's this slope. And what would happen is ants would get onto the side of the sand. It would make that concave hole, but flick loose sand onto it. So when ants got onto the side, it would slope and the sand would be loose. So they'd fall to the bottom and they'd just be sitting there waiting to chomp it up. Just like a Sarlacc pit. Yeah, they like
reach up and grab it. That's not how the Sarlacc pit works. The Sarlacc pit is that pit is its esophagus and nothing comes up and gets you. You just fall straight into its stomach.
Sure.
But anyway, because the Sarlacc is like a giant creature. I don't know how it fucking reproduces. Yeah. But so head around that pit, being careful not to fall inside, and you'll see a red crystal lizard. I think this is, again, the first one we encounter.
Yeah. So it's a crystal lizard and you may notice that it looks different to the rest and you may get excited because you're like, well, this guy's got to have some awesome stuff. But no.
No, he just explodes. He just blows up on you. He doesn't drop anything. He explodes. He has really low health, so he's easy to kill from a distance. And he only gives you one soul.
Yep. It's just from being from. Just turning the rules against you.
It doesn't respawn, though, at least. That's good.
No. But I don't know. I wonder if they could have made it look similar to the normal ones, like less obviously, because then they could have put them around the place and you could have fallen for the trap multiple times like they did with the mimics.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, the fact that red, like from this point on, if you fall for it again with the other red lizards that are going to be in the game.
Yeah, then, it's your fault. You're dumb.
Yeah, fool me once, you know.
Do you fall for it more than once?
Nah.
Okay. Surprised.
Yeah, thanks. Been working on that mental acuity.
That was not a compliment.
Donuts help.
That was the opposite of a compliment.
Fuck you.
But you're very welcome.
Okay.
So, the last door on the left contains a hollow mage and a spider. These are the guys you could snipe from Ornifex's room. Breaking some junk in the back of the room reveals another spider and a chest containing the Crescent Axe. The Crescent Axe is a great axe with a really long reach. This has got an interesting item description. One senses that this axe was once imbued with a sacred power, but only traces of it remain. Perhaps those who blessed this axe are no longer with us. What does that mean?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's really weird. I did a little bit of reading online, couldn't find anything.
I looked into it as well. You know, imbued with a sacred power. Doesn't appear to have anything special about it. I looked into it too, yeah. Nobody's saying, like, if you do this and do this, then it explodes or what have you. So, not sure. Not sure at the moment.
Yeah, so if you have any ideas, let us know.
Yep, and from that chest, you also get to pick up the spell Soul Vortex.
Which is absolutely useless.
Yeah?
Yeah, I don't like it.
It kind of has a bit of an area of effect. It's not bad for crowd control.
Even then, I don't think it does enough damage, and I think it's hard to get it to hit people. And the only thing I think it's kind of good for is large bosses where they're not very mobile, and you can get the whole thing to hit them.
Okay.
But I didn't... I mean, I'm a mage, and I don't really like that spell. It's kind of like that, you know, Soul Spear Barrage. It's really good in really, really narrow circumstances, and outside that, it's useless.
And it kind of bugs me that the spells that they've added to this game, which you should get excited about, are all kind of poor.
Yeah, they're a bit anticlimactic.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, moving along.
So, Back into the room where you killed the mage and the spider, on your left is some more junk to break. Once you go through the IKEA furniture, there's a slopey room full of sand with a skeleton. You can stomp on him and he falls to pieces. There's also a door. So loot the corpse in the room and head out the door, and you find yourself in a courtyard.
Yeah, and in this courtyard, you'll find yourself fighting some infected hollows and an angry basilisk.
Yeah, and across from you is a half-broken door, and you'll find a couple of spiders inside. If you take your time, they break the door down and come out and get you. Head up some stairs, find some titanite, and heading outside that door, another basilisk will spring up beneath you. If you can kill him from range, when you go back downstairs, because you've headed far enough into the courtyard, the porcine peasant will spawn. The porcine peasant is a red phantom, scripted invasion.
He carries the porcine shield, and we mentioned the porcine shield. You pick it up in the old iron keep.
Yep, it's the one that was a nod to Epic Name Bro.
Yep, and you also notice that he uses the pickaxe as a weapon.
Yeah, like the peasants upstairs. Anyway, directly ahead of where you drop down is another door, and when you try to open it, there's a unique message. It says, too heavy to open. I haven't seen that before. When you break it, it unleashes this damaging gust of wind, so it's best to destroy it from a distance.
Yeah, I did see that, so I thought, well, okay, if it's too heavy to open, then I'll just start swinging at it with my weapon, and sure enough, the wind blows out.
Blows out. Do you need another donut for your mental acuity?
I think I do. But then I'll just end up talking like this as I chew.
It's horribly insensitive to make fun of. I was halfway through that joke and I thought, ooh, maybe not. Maybe I should have bought that one. Oh, wait. That's not what I meant.
Oh, God.
Oh, Jesus.
No.
Oh, God.
No. The worst possible thing you could have followed that up with. I'm in tears. Oh, Jesus. Oh, I'm crying.
My head
I need a pee.
Oh, for fuck's sake. That wasn't at all what I meant.
All right, so I've regained composure. Now, where are we? I swung my weapon at this door, and sure enough, the wind blew out, and it knocked me over. It blew out. And yes, if you go in there, you end up coming across a door, which you can use that Seldora Den key on that we got from either Creighton or Pate.
Yeah, so inside there are two chests, a wooden one containing some rusted coins. It's trapped. It's a firebomb trap, and when you activate it, you'll hear either Creighton or Pate, depending who you left alive, making some statements from the next room that clarify that actually the one that's living is a psychopath that's evil. So really it's kind of like saying, well, you sided with the wrong guy, didn't you?
Yeah, so kind of bolstering that narrative that both of them are just bad no matter what you choose. It's like, you know, there is no lesser of two evils. They're just as bad as each other.
Exactly. It's like a zero-sum game. You can always try to side with the good guy, but it's rigged so that you always side with the bad guy, or they're both evil. So next to the chest is another chest, a metal chest, containing the engraved gauntlets, one of my favorite items in the whole game.
Really? I mean, you might be able to tell me something that makes me look at them differently, but basically I'm guessing the reason you like them is because it adds a 5% chance of a normal attack being a critical attack. Now, 5% just doesn't seem like enough to me to make it seem valuable.
People are saying it's more like 15%, and I think that sounds about right. But it doesn't just apply to normal attacks. You can get that 1.5 multiplier. I haven't noticed this myself, but 1.5 multiplier on your backstabs or on your dropping attacks.
Ooh.
But also, especially if you combine it with other weapons and other items that increase your likelihood to do a crit, it's massively helpful to just be fighting along. Think about if you are using Rickard's Rapier.
Well, I was going to say, and I could see this being much more beneficial to a dex build.
Yeah. So if you're doing multiple attacks all at once, some of them are going to be crits.
For the listeners at home, he sat there flailing his hand wildly as he was talking about doing multiple attacks with Rickard's Rapier. By flailing your hand wildly? Yeah. Okay.
Rapiers are really interesting. Anyway, so I think that's a cool item. One of my favorites. Stone gauntlets with strange engravings. It's cool. It's awesome. I like it. Cool. So grab all that stuff and head back out into the sandy courtyard. Now, on your left, there's an archway. You can head through there and you're standing before this strange sea of stone spikes.
Yeah, it's a really cool visage, but ultimately they're not that threatening. Like, once you get into them, they just very slowly deteriorate your HP. And
yeah. Doesn't do much damage.
Some people have said that they do a bit of durability damage as well.
Yeah, we tested that. I think
we checked. It may happen, but if it is, then it's very minor.
Because we ran around in there a little bit and checked the durability on items. Didn't seem to go down. So I think it's probably fine. Yeah, it's pretty useless. I think it's actually... I think the only use of it is that if you cross a bridge, on the other side of that sea, there are some parasitized undead that drop down from above. And if they fall into that pit, they're surely going to die.
Yeah, they seem to take more damage than you do.
Absolutely. You know what that sea reminds me of? It reminds me of one of the attacks that Seath the Scaleless does to you.
Yeah, yeah. So that one encounter you have with him the first time, you can't escape, you have to die. A lot of people were a bit put off by that in the game, but that's a discussion for another day. Yeah, you enter his room and he does this petrifying attack, which makes all these spikes come out of the ground and, you know, ultimately you just end up getting dead.
Yeah, he does it to you later when you encounter him again, but it's easy to dodge. Now, you can range those parasitized undead if you so desire, but either way, what you're going to do is come to a door with a spider motif on it. And once you head inside, it's kind of like a cathedral. I think it's interesting, a couple of things. Firstly, there's a lot of worship going on here. You know, you find the prowling magus and there's a lot of church pews everywhere.
Pew.
So there's a lot of like religious stuff going on, but also
cleric in the area as well.
Yeah. Ultimately what happened here was after all this stuff was built, the spiders took over.
Mm-hmm.
But on the door to this place, and I presume the door was built before the spiders took over, but it's a big old spider motif. What I think it is this. Duke Seldora was interested in spiders. He'd been interested in spiders for ages. He had like an obsession. They talk about his obsession with spiders. And ultimately that was the downfall of this area and kind of his downfall, correct, depending on your interpretation of things. Maybe he did fine out of it all. I'll put that argument to you later. But I think that kind of bled out into the town. Like, you know, he liked spiders. He's always talking about spiders. And maybe people started adopting that in the area, which is evidenced by the fact that there's the spider on the door.
No, I don't think you need to go that far. He ruled over the area. If he commanded that he wants spiders drawn on doors, he would have got spiders drawn on doors. I don't think that, you know, it had to be the will of the people. He probably just controlled the landscape.
Mate, yeah, I suppose you're right. He just likes spiders.
Yeah. We do have enough evidence now to suggest that Seldora has always had a fascination with spiders. So it seems like that maybe was the case before he started toying around with Freya and all the rest.
Or at least before Freya came and made everyone's life hell. So head inside that door and there are several spiders hanging from the roof. You can get the drop on them early and range some of them, but eventually you're going to have to fight with them all.
Now, before we go too far, this is the room that we mentioned last episode where as you enter that door, there will be a little sand patch with the mushrooms in it. So this is what we were talking about when we said you can drag that friendly pig down that will dig up the pickaxe.
Yeah. After you kill the spiders, you'll notice there's a door on your right, which you can't open right now. We'll come back to it later when we get the key.
But right next to the door is a pew. And if you break the pew is a corpse. And on said corpse, you get nothing of terrible interest. Soul of a hero and a gold pine resin.
Yeah.
Actually, the soul of the heroes, I think they actually yield some significant amount. Yeah, like 10,000 20, souls 000, or something. So yeah.
Which is decent. At the far end of the room, there are two levers. The one on the right reveals a corpse holding some homeward bones, and the one on the left reveals a parasitized undead and a ladder to exit.
Mm.
So get up the ladder, and at the top you have to jump off a small ledge, and you're in a weird room full of spider webs. It kind of gives you a hint about what kind of boss is coming, as if you couldn't see it already.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a bunch of stupid people that go in through it and went, oh, spiders, yeah.
So, as you said, the room has spiderwebs all over the place, and the goal is to get from this higher up area down to the bottom. And to do so, you need to sort of walk along these bridges made out of spiderweb. But as you walk on them, it slows the speed at which you can walk.
And you can't jump.
Yep, and you can't jump, so you can only fall from a ledge to a ledge. And spiders sort of crawl out from underneath and they come starting to attack you.
Yeah. So if you head across the first bridge, behind a pillar, there's a little corpse and a spider waiting to drop down. There's a ferrous lockstone at the other end. Broadly speaking, there's a few pickups along the way, but you need to progress down to the bottom. Probably the best pickup at the bottom is a simpleton spice. Everything else is kind of average. I think it's best to check every nook and cranny of the area, both for pickups and also for spiders, because as you wander around, spiders will come out en masse and mob you. And there is a summonable NPC here, so it's worth hunting around and finding him.
Mm. Now, on the note of the spiders, the one saving grace is they're quite squishy. Any fairly high-leveled weapon should be able to take them out in one hit. But one thing that we never mentioned that I just thought of now, they seem to drop some weird things.
Like a Zweihander?
Yeah. And they have a high chance of drops as well.
Yeah.
It might just be that there's so many of them that it increases the likelihood. But yeah, I can make a run from the bonfire to the boss and pick up multiple like Zweihanders and all kinds of crazy weapons from these spiders. Why do they have weapons on them?
I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, it's just strange.
They also, one dropped a great sword to me earlier today, which is strange. What's interesting about this area, actually, is you're on some really large webs, and moving around on the webs causes the spiders to attack you. It's kind of like being a bug stuck in a web. Your movement makes them come out and up on get that. You.
That's very good.
Mm.
So I suppose we're ready to enter into the fog gate.
Yeah, so summon an NPC. The summon is Ashen Knight Boyd. He's hiding alongside a pillar in the room before the boss fight. He's very useful. He often distracts Freya, and he wears the Royal Soldier set, which suggests he might be part of the Dragonlake Army detachment.
What does that mean?
Yeah, what is a detachment?
Oh, God.
So anyway, head inside and meet the Duke's Dear Freya. The Duke's Dear Freya is described in the guidebook as a monstrous two-headed spider which serves as the keeper of the Writhing Ruin.
Writhing Ruin.
Yeah. Apparently Duke Soldora's pet, and more than likely the progenitor of the swarms of parasite spiders which overran and destroyed Brightstone Cove. But what could the Duke have wanted with such an abomination? And what madness could have possessed him to allow the destruction of his own domain? So, a few things to say about this. Did you have something to jump in with first? Because I have a bit of
pontification. I'll take over. The only thing I was going to say is, so I'm willing to concede that I was probably off base with my comments last episode about how I don't think the Duke was responsible for Freya. Now that we've looked into it, it's very clear that the Duke, Soldora, is responsible.
He had a hand in it.
Yeah.
So, I think that if they're talking about what madness would have possessed him to allow the destruction of his own domain, there's a couple of ideas. I mean, he might have just been hollow, but I think actually there's evidence that his soul now resides within Freya. And I think that there's evidence, or there's an argument that could be made, that Seath's spirit, or the will of Seath's soul, the old Paldrake soul, drove him to create Freya and continue Seath's experiments.
You've got that look on your face like you're leading something cool and you're going to blow my mind.
I am. You wait for this. So actually, I mean, the name of the boss suggests that the Duke really loved that spider.
Of course, yes.
Now, the name Freya is actually a name from Norse mythology, you may have known. You know this?
Well, no, I acknowledge that it sounds fairly exotic, but...
Yeah, people just know this shit. I mean, given your knowledge of Zeus, the god of Thor, I thought
you'd be
up on your Norse mythology.
That's Greek mythology, Church.
What? No, it's not. Well, partly, I suppose. So Freya was from Norse mythology, associated with love, sexuality, beauty, fertility, gold, war, death, and a type of sorcery called, I'm going to pronounce this as best I can, Seidr, which is often anglicized to be pronounced Seath.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Now, the word Seidr, apparently, is derived from words associated with chords, strings, and snares. Like webs. That's interesting. And that whole religious practice in those kind of pre-Scandinavian areas was often female-dominated. So here we have, you know, the Duke's Dear Freya associated with webs, associated with a type of sorcery that was pronounced Seath. It's like they could have picked any old name, and they just picked one that happened to have those links.
Honestly, like...
I love it.
For as much as we do sometimes point out the things that Fromm do wrong, the things they do right, like, my goodness.
Mm.
They just... Wow.
Now, multiple things will tell you that Duke Soldora was so obsessed that he took on a form that was far from human. So, Sweet Charquois will tell you that, and some of the item descriptions from what you can make with the soul of this boss will tell you that. But when you meet Duke Soldora after the boss fight, he looks quite human. He's just a hollow.
He does. Yeah. So...
And interestingly enough, he who was renowned, who was supposedly doing all these experiments and had this obsession, doesn't trigger Manscorpion Tark to say that his creator has been destroyed.
Doesn't?
No. Killing Freya triggers that interaction, but killing the Duke doesn't. So you can kill Freya and then leave and talk to Tark, and he will say, oh, you've killed my creator.
Oh, my.
So what I think's going on is that the soul and maybe the consciousness of the Duke resides in the Duke's Dear Freya, which might be why... The appearance of Freya is as a giant spider with two heads.
Because it's got two souls.
Because one of the heads is perhaps Duke Soldora.
Wow.
Yeah.
The other one's surely Seath, though, no?
Well, it's probably a creation from Seath's soul.
Well, as in as much as the big bosses from the previous game are in this game through their souls and the other, you know, old ones.
Also, it's strongly suggested that Freya is female, implied to be the mother of all the spiders in the area. And Freya is a female name, but Manscorpion's Hux always refers to his creator with male pronouns. So that's quite interesting. I think that there's some evidence that the soul of Duke Soldora resides within the Duke's dear Freya. The interesting thing as well is that after you kill the Duke's dear Freya, which we'll get to in a second, Sweet Xiaoqua says, "The writhing ruin keeps searching as we speak, searching for its heart's desire." So what is the writhing ruin? We know that Manscorpion Tark says, "My master never truly dies. He only changes form so that he may seethe forever." So what I think is that the writhing ruin is seethe.
I'm giving a lot of oohs and ahs, but I mean, you've purposely shaded me from seeing this part of the notes because you wanted to
unveil it all.
Yeah, and I'm super excited, but wow, I don't know where you're going next.
That's basically all that I have, I think. I think there's a strong indication that Freya is, well, I think it's beyond a doubt that Freya is created from the soul of Seath. I think it's very strongly indicated that the soul of Duke Soldora resides within Freya. And I also think there's decent evidence that this writhing ruin that is constantly referenced around the Duke's dear Freya is in fact Seath.
Or at least like the essence of that travels through time or space or what have you to continue on surviving.
Exactly. I mean, the Duke's dear Freya is described as the writhing ruin's keeper. What does that mean to be the keeper of the writhing ruin? Right. I think it's implied that
the soul.
Yeah, that's where the soul lives.
And as you said, look, the two heads on the boss itself, it's a bit of an odd design choice to go with. It just fits that narrative so well that there's two sort of opposing, or not even opposing, but two combined forces within that body.
Exactly.
You know, with their own sort of head, I guess.
Interesting. So, on to the fight. Freya is a giant two-headed spider, and there's a head at each end of her body.
Mm-hmm. Don't know how she poops. Maybe she just vomits from one end when she eats from the other, but who knows?
She does vomit up some acids. Maybe that's her pooping.
Ah, there you go. Yeah. I was just joking, but I like it.
I never thought of that, though. How does she poop? It's like Cat Dog. You ever watch that cartoon, Cat Dog?
Don't want to go there. It's
how did
crazy.
Cat Dog poop? What I like to think is in another dimension, connected by some kind of wormhole, there was another Cat Dog that was just the two back ends.
Oh, no.
Just ran around blindly bumping into stuff and shitting.
Oh, no. Oh, God. That would be really strange one day, wouldn't it?
Strange every fucking day, I'll tell you now.
But if one day they just stopped pooping.
Oh.
Our masters have died.
The other ones are... Oh, my gosh. The worst thing would be is if like the dog died or the cat died and the other one was left alive.
No, the worst would be is if the anuses died, because then they would just fill up with shit.
Well, maybe the anuses would be invincible.
Dark Souls. I think that's what we're here for.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yes. Now, I like this fight. Now,
me too.
The first thing that happens, though, when you walk through the door is you get attacked by a lot of little ads, little spiders, and they're a pain in the ass, but if you can get over them with a spell initially, then you're going to do fine.
Yeah.
The fight itself had a little bit of trouble with at first. I found the winning technique is to just stay relatively close, like in and amongst her feet. She's got 8 feet, as you would expect, and they can pose a bit of a threat, but they never really sort of came down on top of me too often to be concerning. And all you have to do is continue walking counterclockwise. And as long as you do that, you're probably going to do fine. You can roll through the laser in a pickle. It's a high risk because sometimes it will hit you regardless. But as long as you continue walking right and you stay close, you will be able to outrun it every time.
Absolutely. So the only parts of Freya that are vulnerable are her heads.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the advantages of having Ashen Knight Boyd in the room is that he will distract one of the heads.
Right.
And you can attack the other one.
Now, two things about that. Firstly, did you know that if you did enough damage to one head without killing her, it'll fall off?
I did.
Now, did you know that with a spell...
Warmth,
you can replenish her health, which gives her more health, which allows you to do enough damage to the other head that falls off, and at that point you can't kill her.
She's invincible.
Yep.
So that's a good way to troll people.
Oh, isn't it?
You go in, and I've seen people complaining about that. You go in to someone else's world and just keep casting warmth on her. Both her heads fall off, and then you go, okay, black separation crystal, see you later. And they're left stuck with a boss that has extra health anyway, but now has no ability to be damaged. And the only way out is to die.
Die or,
Homeward Bone or Dark Sign.
Yeah. Cool. Damn it. I wish you didn't know that stuff. I've got two more things that I'm going to pull out in a bit. You may know one of... I shouldn't say that as I'm adjusting my undies. two more things that I'm going to pull out in a bit. Two more things.
Mm-hmm. Two more things. Oh, I suppose, yes. I forgot about those.
Two more things that I'm going to pull out in a bit.
Yeah, you told me. I'm thinking about them now.
Two more things I'm going to pull out in a bit.
Stop saying it!
Well, Jesus. I just want to fucking cut that part out!
Well, you can't.
One of them you may know. I'm hoping you don't know the other, because I don't feel many have. It's actually something that I discovered myself.
And many
I've
have what?
Never seen other people discuss, but we'll cover that after we've done with the boss.
You don't feel many have what?
Discovered it.
Oh. You said, hope you don't know this, because I don't feel many have. Many have know this. You got to be pedantic.
No, you don't.
No, you don't.
So, come on. Carry this ship.
Get into a fight with Freya and kill her. Also worth noting, I suppose, that soul bolt attack always reminded me of an attack Seath does, when, you know, he's shooting you with a laser. Anyway.
Yeah, which is nice that they both do it, because, again, it implies a connection.
Yeah. So, in New Game, she drops the soul of the Duke's dear Freya, which actually doesn't look the same as the other great souls. Do you notice that?
I don't think I did.
Yeah, it looks different.
Is it because there's two souls in one?
I don't know why it looks different. The description says, soul of the Duke's dear Freya, the Writhing Ruin's keeper. The Writhing Ruin is an ancient thing whose shadow remains cast over the world. Soldora is a place burdened by terrible misdeeds, another reference to sin, and those who remained there were transformed beyond recognition. So, another reference to the Writhing Ruin. It's an ancient thing whose shadow remains cast over the land. I think they're still talking about Seath.
Yeah, and we know that dragons are invincible, or supposedly invincible, so... Yeah.
Oh, we know that Seath lives on, so...
Yeah, that would fit with the ancientness of the soul.
Yes. The ancientivity, I think, is what you're looking for.
Thanks. What's the bright word?
I don't know. It might be ancientness.
Anxiety?
Anxiety. Suffering anxiety right now.
Antiquity.
Antiquity?
Oh, my God.
Oh, God, it's antiquity. Fuck, it's just so obvious. Yeah, thank you, lovey. You didn't have to research that one.
I didn't.
Damn, you're good. So you can trade that soul for a couple of swords.
Yep.
The Spider Fang, which is a sword that shoots a slowing web for the R2 attack.
Kind of cool.
Yeah.
Handy in PvP because people just don't know what the fuck hit them.
And that's one of those items that says, you know, supposedly the Duke himself, an eccentric soul fascinated with spiders, went on to take a form that was far from human. The other one is Spider Silk, which is a thrusting sword, like a rapier-style sword.
Yeah, and it's can actually pierce through shields, which is kind of cool. It's always nice having a weapon that can go around a shield for people that are turtling. But I just found with this game in PvP, people don't rely on shields nearly as much as they did in Dark Souls 1. Like, every PvP fight was pretty much walk around with the shield up 24/7.
Absolutely. In New Game Plus, Freya drops the old Paledrake soul, which we talked about previously, and is strong evidence that Freya is somehow associated with Seath. The old Paledrake soul can be traded for the Moonlight Greatsword, which is a recurring theme in From games. There are games that are not in the Souls universe at all, created by From, that have this sword in them.
Mm.
It's been
pretty cool.
All their games, and that's quite cool.
Maybe that's the Writhing...
Maybe that soul is the Writhing Ruin. Ooh, doesn't writhe, isn't a ruin, but who knows?
To Seath?
Yeah. This is the sword that Benhart thinks he has.
But he doesn't.
No. And interestingly, if you
you're actually willing to admit that.
No, I know, and it's true. Interestingly, if you want a nail in the coffin of any objection to the idea that Seath and Freya are associated, this is the sword you get when you chop off Seath's tail.
Mm, pretty cool.
Yeah. So, after you've killed that giant spider, a crystal grows in the place where you embrace her soul.
Yeah, and this one threw me for a bit of a loop at first, because when you first kill her, I think there's just a little purple sign down by the ground, but the crystal isn't there. It only appears after you go to a bonfire or something. And so I spent ages like, why is it here? And I eventually just decided it must be a glitch, you know, just a texture that randomly ended up there somehow. Sure enough, I came back and there's a crystal, and then I went through the same process. Why is it here? What's going on? And, you know, I tried to figure it out. I couldn't. But it does have some significance, and many people may not realize that. there's an item you'll get much later in the game. Well, I say that, we're making some good progress now, but it's used for entering different areas of the game. I'm trying to figure out a way of saying this without giving away too many spoilers, but you can enter into an area using this item that you'll get from a dragon later on in the game, I think is all I'll say. So be sure to come back here once you get that item. It'll open up a whole new sort of secret area that many people probably wouldn't be aware of.
Yeah. So before you leave the arena, it's worth taking a look around. Have you noticed the thing on the ceiling?
I have. I noticed it initially and I was like, what is this? I couldn't figure out why it would be there. There's just no connection to dragons in the area, I thought.
Yeah. So there's the corpse of an ancient dragon petrified and hanging from the ceiling.
Hmm. Why?
I don't know. It's not Seath. Seath is not the same as an ancient dragon. He looks very different. In fact, that's one of the reasons why you could say that Seath is the writhing ruin. If you look at like the lower half of his body, it's just all these weird tentacles. He's like,
that's a good point.
You know, that's the noise he makes when he perambulates around.
I love that word, perambulate.
It's a decent word.
Mm. Now, once you're done taking in the atmosphere, off to the right is a hole in the wall, which you can enter into the Duke's chambers, or the Lord's private chambers.
Yeah, and there you will find an incredibly weak Duke Soldora. He is useless. He has an S-Doc. I think it's an S-Doc. He has a sword anyway. Mm. He swings at you in a really kind of infantile and useless way, and you can kill him easily. One strike, he will generally die. He drops the Brightstone Key.
And as we mentioned, he is completely hollow at this point, so it could make sense that he is no longer with his soul. He is literally just an empty vessel, just perambulating around.
The description of the Brightstone Key, oh, that's good. Good utilization of perambulation. The Brightstone Key is described thusly. Key used in the Brightstone Cove Soldora. The eccentric Lord Soldora, known for his fascination with spiders, built a town and a personal fortune by mining Brightstone. One day the town was overrun, but Lord Soldora only stood by and watched, eerily contented.
Mm.
So old Seldora, he also drops a fragrant branch of yore and the dark quartz ring plus one. And it raises dark defense, you know, whatever. It references Pyromancer Glocken. He's referenced a few times. He's a guy at the Melfian Magic Academy. He made these replicas of the original dark quartz ring, apparently. Who's Pyromancer Glocken? I've seen his name a few times. I can't find anything online. I'd be interested to see. He's one of those NPCs that's mentioned, but never
like
fleshed out.
Lloyd and that kind of stuff. All Father Lloyd and whatnot, you know. Just part of the universe, but not something worth focusing on. So we're in the Duke's room at the moment, and there's two things that I've noticed in here. One of them many people are aware of. The other one I've brought up a number of times because I picked up on it, and I've never come across somebody else that was aware. So I feel like this is one Easter egg that I've discovered myself, my contribution to the community. So the first is, have you noticed the cage in the Duke's room?
No.
You haven't? Oh, wow. Okay, cool. Two things I get to
reveal. I looked around his room earlier today. I found some weird item. Like, there's one weird thing that looks like he wind it up, and there's, like, some strange, like, celestial objects on a... It's weird. Like, a little round...
Actually, we might talk about that in a moment.
Okay.
But the cage first. So, the cage is sort of dangling from the roof, and it's about the size of... If you put a cage around a human head. I don't know why I went for that, but that's about the size. And the wiring is all broken and busted open. So people are suggesting that it's probably where he used to keep his pet Freya before she got too large for the cage.
Ah, but yeah, that's very, that's almost certainly what it is, that Freya lived in there.
Oh yeah, yep.
That's quite cool.
Yeah, so he used to have her as a little pet before she got big. And the second thing, now it might be what you were just talking about a second ago, but what I noticed is on the Duke's table is a small item which happens to be an exact replica of the navigation table that you find in the ship in No Man's Wharf after you kill the Flexile Sentry that you have to activate to make the ship travel to the Lost Bastille.
Lost Bastille.
Thank you. And that table is perfectly replicated as a little item, an ornament on the Duke's desk. I don't actually think there's a connection between the two things.
It's like they used the...
I feel like they just shrunk it down for decoration.
That's quite cool. I think that is what I was talking about. I noticed it and I thought, wow, what the hell is this item?
Yep.
That's quite cool. Mm. Oh, good spot there, buddy.
Thank you.
So, after that room, the book room, as you called it last time, but it is also called a library, as one of our listeners pointed out. You can turn to your right and head down a narrow corridor to a room where the primal bonfire rests. But before you can reach it, you have to beat Vengarl's body.
Yeah. So, if you remember, one of your favourite NPCs, Vengal's head, was the head in the red rusted helmet that we found back in the Shaded Ruins.
Yeah, just the Shaded Woods.
Shaded Woods, you're right.
Just resting on a pile of rocks, all pontificating about the world. He's a decent guy. He used to be a dick, I think. I think I wouldn't have liked Vengal when he was whole, but now that he's, you know, a bit more philosophical, he and I think, are kindred spirits. But his body is a real asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, the body, nice fight. It wasn't simple. He's quite large and powerful. And I almost feel too large for the head. Did you get that impression?
You're right. I didn't think of that, but maybe, yeah.
It's a
normal sized head, but a big body.
Yeah.
He really, as soon as you walk in the room, he doesn't give you any time to think. He just races at you.
Yeah, because it breaks. I mean, this is the last of the old ones that we're going to come across. And it breaks the rule that every time you kill an old one, you go into the next room, there's a primal bonfire, you're done. You've got that comfort. You just know in the very next room, I get to return to Majula.
Yep.
In this case, you enter the room with a ton of souls from just killing Freya, and it's like, bam, motherfucker, surprise.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa. So you just sort of panic and you realize that there's an opportunity. You may lose a shit ton of souls at this moment. Yeah.
So once you kill Vengar, he drops Vengar's set, which is heavy, does very decent defense, and is rusted over like all Vengar's gear from age, I suppose. You can head back to his head in the Shaded Woods, and now the head sells the red rust sword, which is what Vengar holds in his preferred hand. It says it's incredibly rusted but still deadly because it's so heavy. And it also says, very interestingly, legend has it that it was built to test the limits of the strength of Ferocer knights until Vengarl swung it about like a wooden plaything, claiming ownership by demonstration.
Cool.
He was a beast.
Yeah.
The head also sells the red rust shield.
And that one says, the chisels on the face were carved by Vengarl to count the heads that he claimed. The shield is terribly rusted and worn, but incredibly powerful, as if the deeds of its previous owner have rubbed off on it.
That's disgusting.
Well done.
Now that you have the Brightstone key, you can head back to that room we talked about with the spider on the door and the spiders hanging from the roof.
Yeah, the one with the sand patch and the truffle that the pig can dig up.
Exactly. So on the side of the room is a door that you can open. Beyond that door is an ambush by a whole bunch of spiders. A second door needs to be unlocked, and in a chest beyond it, you will find the Black Knight Ultra Greatsword.
Yeah, this one does built-in fire damage. And not a bad one to infuse with a Fire Drake stone with Macduff, because then you would just be adding even more fire damage.
Exactly. And I've even heard about people putting the charcoal flame...
Pine resin,
on it. And they're talking about one hitting all kinds of things.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's got the same moveset as a Zweihander, and I don't mind a Zweihander.
Yeah.
Speaking of fire damage, you'll also find Great Fireball inside that chest, which is just an upgraded version of Fireball. And you'll find a Fire Seed. So it's all fire in that chest.
Yeah, not bad. Okay, so I think that's three old ones down now, isn't it, Church?
It is. So the next destination is down the pit and to the rotten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Moving right along.
Now, what's the mod of the week, Taboo?
I don't actually have one. And you know what?
What?
I feel terrible about it, but I went digging and I went looking and the community just hasn't done anything good lately.
Fuck them, these bastards. Actually, I've been using that mod that you talked about last week. You know, the one that levels out your soul memory?
Metacap.
Yeah, yep. Metacap version something something. It's decent. I mean, it's easy to use and
It
seems to increase my ability to access people around me. So that's nice. And it doesn't cost me anything. It doesn't change the game dynamic.
It does change the game dynamic, but for the good.
So yeah, I think it's good. I like it.
So, look, I do apologize that we don't have a mod this week. Unfortunately, the same sort of path has happened with this segment as what happened with the tips of the week. We sort of eventually came to a point where I felt like there wasn't any particularly standout ones to be bothered bringing up. So, look, I'm going to keep digging, and as things come up that I think are going to be of interest to the community, I'll point them out. But ultimately, I just don't want to bore you guys with, you know, texture replacement mods and that kind of stuff, because they're so personal that it's just pointless.
Yeah. Now, last week we asked a question about getting some constructive criticism, and I thought we might get something negative to improve on. Everything was really quite positive.
Yeah, look, our fans like us. What can I say?
Stella raised something interesting. Stella King?
Yeah, he's a big contributor to our community, and he wrote in and said, "It would be nice to hear you gents field a few answers from the listener feedback questions you ask each week. Seems a bit daft not to include a couple choice community replies on the following episode prior to asking the next listener question."
Which is exactly what we just did. Well, job done. Good idea, Stella. The end. No, he's right.
Yeah, look, to be honest, it's something that we always intended to do, and basically no real good excuse at the moment. It's just a simple case of I focus so much on writing the actual notes that all the extraneous side of our notes sort of took a bit of a back seat and got neglected and somehow just flew under the radar. So apologies. Yeah, we'll intend to do that. We do get some good replies to each question each week, so it's definitely worth pointing out the ones that we liked.
Absolutely. So, speaking of questions, next question.
Yeah, so the question this episode is, what's your theory on the Writhing Ruin? I know we put across a pretty strong case for what we believe, but there's a lot of theories out there, and we want to hear what your favourites are.
Yeah, what is the Writhing Ruin?
Yeah, so, another episode down, eh?
Yes, indeedy. That's...
indeedy.
Fuck, I said indeedy. Anyway, that's Brightstone Cove to Eldora. Where are we going next?
We are heading down the pit to eventually take on the last of the old ones.
Yeah, the rotten. That guy stinks. He's smelly. So I suppose that's that. Time to, wrap up, rack off. Rack off is a really Australian thing to say, I think. Oh, rack off, mate. You know? Aren't you glad you don't have one of those really ochre accents? I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but it doesn't suit my affect.
Our listeners, maybe we do.
Probably. We sound really, put another shrimp on the barbie, mate.
Do you notice that when you come across Australians on TV, they sound odd to you? It's fucking annoying, right? That we live in this country and we hear this accent all day, every day, and yet America has brainwashed us so much with their media that when we hear an Australian accent on TV, it sounds freaking weird. Yeah,
and I actually think Americans, I don't think they realise how saturated foreign media is with American media, American TV shows, American movies, etc. And so if you're watching TV and an ad comes on with only Australians, if you've been watching a lot of American ads that, you know, that hour, for instance, it sounds really grating and weird. You're like, oh, wow, those people are Australians.
Yeah.
It's really strange. It's a definite and deliberate tactical decision by America. They've put a lot of money into being able to put their media internationally. It's kind of a miracle
that we've been in any way successful, isn't it? We should probably just put on our American accent, say.
Brightstone Cove, Eldora.
Yeah. Yeehaw. Wow, that must be as like bad as an Australian hearing. Yeah. G'day, mate.
Betty's covering her eyes. You know, she's stressing out.
Stress note. Wait, that's Canadian.
It's Canadian.
So, how do we end a podcast?
How do you end a podcast? Y'all come back now. You're here.
It'll do.
The Dark Souls 2 has been a Screaming and Digital production. You can contact us on info@thedarksouls2.com, join the community at facebook.com/thedarksouls2, tweet @thedarksouls2, or leave a comment on the show notes. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider leaving a review on iTunes or spread the word. Our theme tune is The Knights of Darkness by Zero Project.
Hello, I'm Taboo.
And I'm Church.
Fuck. Hello, I'm Taboo.
And I'm Church.
And we are the Dark Souls 2.
And welcome to the Dark Souls 2, where this episode... I was too busy caught up in my joke. Fuck, start it again.
Again.
For those listening, that this is not going to make the cut, but I was doing a two fingers for two the Dark Souls 2 and then another two fingers for the Dark Souls 2. And then I was so proud of myself for working out that I could do that I forgot to check the notes.